This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Come get some. Beware, IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me today is Greg Miller.
Mike Aransky's my co-pilot.
Justin Davis. Scoop. And Samuel Claiborne.
Woo!
We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about what we hope happens to gaming in the not-too-distant future. We're going to talk about the games for gaming, but first... An historic event took place last weekend in a desert in New Mexico.
I'm going to go ahead and stop you and say that. Thank you for pronouncing that correctly.
Historic?
Yeah.
Historic.
Unhistoric.
Anhistoric.
Anhistoric.
Anhistoric. Okay. It's not ahistoric.
Right.
Oh, okay, okay.
An historic event.
Gotcha.
Took place in the desert of New
or
Mexico.
Or did it?
Well.
Are we doing, we're putting the truth or hat
on? Hold on. First of all, Sam, explain to us what happened last weekend.
So, last weekend, There's been this controversy for, you know, the last couple of decades about a very well-documented burial of a bunch of Atari games in the desert, and then a couple of people at Atari that have said, that didn't happen. And to make sure that it absolutely happened, it took a film crew and a couple hundred people showing up last weekend just for fun to dig up these games, and they found them.
It was part of a documentary, right?
Yeah, it's part of a documentary for Xbox. Actually, it's going to be only on Xbox. You can only watch it on your Xbox. But and it has like Zach Penn involved, who wrote Avengers and X-Men 2.
Yeah.
And he's directing it. So this film crew went there. Fran Mirabella III, Naomi Kyle, they all went down there, and they saw these games get pulled out of the dirt. And like everybody's talking about the E.T. game that got buried there because it's
right.
A terrible game.
So this is.
But there's tons of other games that got pulled up.
The story is that in 1983, there was the first big video game crash.
Mm-hmm. Like they printed up
the only one.
They printed up more ET carts than the number of Atari 2600s.
That was for Pac-Man. But
oh,
yeah.
Excuse me, Pac-Man
yeah.
carts.
But also, both those games, ET and Pac-Man, were notoriously terrible mm-hmm. for the system for Atari 2600.
And they
the
were expensive
was flooded,
too.
Yeah, and the market was flooded with expensive, terrible games. People got wise. They stopped buying them.
Atari almost went out of business.
Yeah.
And then they supposedly buried millions and millions of carts. And
people thought video games were over.
The only reason there's been some conspiracy theories about it is just because this thing happened and there was like a story in the New York Times, but then no one knew. Like, that was it.
Yeah, you would think, like, why didn't people just go there and dig up the games? And well, it turns out they were buried very deep in the ground. And they were crushed and cemented over partially.
Yeah.
Although this stash that they actually found, like, they dug into, there's no cement there.
Mm-hmm.
There was smelly garbage and a lot of it.
Yeah,
it was. And it stunk there. And there was, like, a sandstorm.
Yeah.
And, like,
conditions were really crazy.
And an archaeologist on the site got methane poisoning.
Jeez, I didn't hear that.
Because, you know, trash that's compacting over the years, it gets very hot. And it decomposes, and it makes a lot of methane.
You put those pipes in the ground to get the methane out.
You could probably light that on fire at some points with the belches of it.
I heard during the sandstorm, though, Fran Mirabella stripped down to his underwear to exfoliate.
There's a picture of him like covered in sand up to his shorts, which is funny.
Yeah, he's wearing capris.
A woman got sick on site. Yeah. There was very dangerous there. And
I mean, it's a dump. It's a garbage dump.
Yeah, yeah. It was so obviously unfakeable too. I mean, it's moon landing levels of unfakeable.
Well, that's the conspiracy theory is that they had this film crew there. They sent out all these members of the press, and they're like, "Look, it's ET."
And we're talking about like 10 people that think that. I just think it's funny.
Do you know that someone joining us right now?
Number 11! Not for a goddamn second do I believe this. I haven't done much research. My problem with
in the absence of all facts.
The whole thing of like, come here and maybe we'll uncover. Well, clearly you're going to uncover it. Why are you inviting everyone there? And then they bring out one like sad bucket and they're like, oh, look what we got, everybody.
No, it's but
like,
didn't they do, didn't on live television they open like Al Capone's bank vault and then it turned out to be empty?
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly they had found this already. They knew this was there. Why do you think it's such a big deal about it?
They actually hadn't hit Atari cartridges.
Bullshit. They did not hit Atari cartridges.
Here's the thing.
Within the 30-minute window of all the journalists showing up.
Let me just clear something up for you. This is so well documented that they put the latitude and longitude of the dig exactly where they were going in on T-shirts. Everybody knew where this stuff was. Nobody got permission to do it. Mm. So it's not like it was really a myth ever. A couple people at Atari said that doesn't sound right because there's an El Paso factory that was emptied out. They did have to take it to the landfill. A guy on hand worked at the factory.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, yeah, we did this. Like, this is where they're buried. So there was in a spot. They picked the spot correctly. I think the only thing that would have been suspect about this is if, like, you know, I don't even know what would have been suspect about it. It was like they knew exactly where they were buried and they unburied them. They got permission first.
Mm.
Did you know before they unburied the site that a piece of an Atari controller was like just found like when they were walking out to let on broken ground?
Oh, that's cool.
So there's tons of just Atari crap there.
Yeah.
But they also, that might have just been like a crazy coincidence too.
It could have been.
It is a garbage dump.
Or maybe they dug it up the month before.
That's what happened.
Yeah,
that's what it was. They didn't go out there.
So you think, to be clear, you don't think that there's no Atari carts buried.
No.
What you think happened is that they'd already dug them up and
I think they had gone out there, yes, and figured it all out.
Couldn't they just found where they buried exactly and then did it right?
Yes.
What's it a PR? PR for who?
The film.
For this documentary that we're all talking about suddenly that we want to download on Xbox this fall.
It is, I'm not coming around on this, but I will say it's a little bit, you call out all these members of the press and spend all this money in the absence of knowing if the stuff's down there. Like you just said
they opened Al Capone's vault and there was nothing in there. Like, you don't know.
Yeah, and that
I'm
was-
I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, they did the whole, like, is it going to be there or not? We don't know.
They did open Al Capone's vault and it was empty, and then it was a disaster that people still talk about, like, 20 years later. Like,
I thought it was to find out whether or not it was true. You know, there's this legend, cartridges are buried here. Mm-hmm. Let's go find out if it's true.
Sure.
It may or may not be true, but they found out it was. Like, it would have been okay if they weren't there, and then they would be like...
My hunch is that they probably verified that they were there and then made a big event out of it.
Is that really that bad, though? Is that,
no, it's not bad at all.
Okay. It's just a PR stunt.
I don't think they verified the event by digging 40 feet into the ground. Mm. But they did take core samples the day before.
What, core samples?
Yeah,
core samples.
You know, you shoot down, you come up with, like, the... Like,
so did they find, like, a layer of Atari carts in the core sample?
What they did is they did the best thing they could without taking a giant tool out there and digging it up.
Sure.
They did they essentially went about it the right way. They had several archaeologists on hand. They figured out exactly the best case scenario dig place, and they dug there, and it seems pretty likely they'd find the thing that they knew was buried there.
Sure. Mm.
I don't think there needs to be a conspiracy around this. But I love it. The conspiracy to help you again is that the games look freaking amazing.
Yeah, that's weird.
They are like shiny and amazing looking.
Yeah,
and then
look what we found in this bucket, guys.
We have, is this Fran's footage?
Yeah.
Fran filmed all this footage and like we went and did like a little like personal rewind theater, which we should do on it because you can see like thousands of games and so many different titles. Defender, you can see tons of Defender carts. Mm. You can see ET, a lot of that. You can see Breakout. I don't know, there's just a bunch of games down there. It's really, really cool. And they're like, they're in their shipping containers, which are, you know, like you stack up a bunch of games in like a cardboard box, and like all those are smashed. So you like see like the side-on view of just like a ton of like the same game. It's so cool.
That's cool.
And you see all the catalogs from the time. You guys remember the catalogs, the Atari catalogs that you see a bunch of in the dump. And but yeah, Naomi and Fran said it was like gross and dangerous and weird. So like I think it'd be strange to invite people out there in the first place, but they did it.
Well, they were buried there because of the video game crash in 1983. They couldn't sell these. They just couldn't sell the games anymore.
Or that had to pull out of that factory specifically down there. Yeah.
Probably. And that leads us to our first question here from one of our viewers, Javier. And he says, if you read this on the show, I go by Javier, not Charles.
And Javier.
Now, there's no... Charles is not written anywhere on this page. That's
well, now
like being
only
like...
call him Charles.
Hi, my name's Damon. I actually go by Damon, not Jonathan.
Can I call you
just
Jonathan?
Just say no. Anyway, he says... I'm aware you guys have touched on this topic before, but it deserves more dialogue. It's no secret that the industry, the video game industry, is going through a drastic transition period and restructuring. What'd you say?
The biz.
Shoestring budget indie games are on the rise, and big titles have many studios hiring a team, making the game, and then laying off said team. Rinse and repeat for next game. Could this be considered heading towards a crash of a different kind? Not one as a result of oversaturation, but of an industry that is changing too rapidly to keep its rhythm going. This won't destroy gaming, but probably change it completely as we know it, and maybe produce a gaming drought for a period. What do you think?
Well, shovelware caused the last crash. Tons of it.
Right.
So much of it that... You know, there was Quaker Oats was making games. Purina had Chase the Chuck Wagon, and these games had were made it into bargain bins that were like 10 cents at the time. Like there were so many games made, so many not sold that like they just couldn't get rid of these games, and people were just like, these games kind of suck anyway, and they just stopped playing them. Now it's very different because we've had shovelware for 30 years since then. Plenty of it. Wii shovelware is like the most amazing thing ever. I love it. I'm like, it's my favorite thing.
You're fiending for it.
Yeah.
What do you got for me, THQ?
So health bullying. And, yeah.
So that happens parallel to a great industry, which makes indie games and blockbuster games. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it's kind of similar to the arcade industry, which the home consoles died out, but in the arcades, for the next couple of years, people are like, oh, the game industry crashed. Well, actually, 1985, 1986, there's actually some pretty amazing arcade games like Golden Axe and Afterburner and stuff like that in those years that people like because they were high-end, great-quality game experiences. And then also PC gaming was huge then. So we can have a crash of a shovelware market. I hope there's a crash in iPhones.
That's the thing. That's the shovelware market now, right?
Garbage.
The difference is that there's no physical media that they have to just have to get.
It doesn't
rid of,
cost them anything to make the game.
That's the thing. There's no risk, right?
Right.
It's all reward. So even if that went away, which I kind of wish it did, then we'd still have incredible indie developers and blockbuster games. Mm.
I mean, I think things are changing. You know, there's going to be less AAA games. We've already talked on GameScoop a lot of times about how the middle's falling out. I don't think we're ever, like, the video game industry is way too broad now for it to ever, you know, get smaller to any significant degree. It's hard on people's jobs. We've talked about that on GameScoop before, too, how this boom and bust cycle of staffing up, then you lay them off when the project's over is harmful to this business. And so maybe games should be structured a little bit more like movies where people can be mercenaries and go from project to project.
Well, I mean, the big thing, right, for me, the concern that he raises, I don't see a crash coming where it all falls apart out of the blue. For me, he was talking about, you know, a drought, right? That is a more real threat for me because if I was a kid...
Do you own a GameCube?
Do you own a Wii U right now?
If I was a kid on the outside and I was thinking about becoming a game developer, the cycle would be a turnoff to me. I can either go and do this thing where I work on God of War and then get laid off and try to find another job and get laid off and find it, or I can go be an indie developer and barely be making it most of the time.
Yeah,
most
sure.
game developers barely
I saw Tim Schafer post on Twitter the other day, like he just did the calculation of how many years it takes to make a game.
Yeah.
He's like, I have like 8 more games.
Oh, right.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a lot of games. Has he made 8 games now up to this point?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean,
I think about that, but with dogs.
Well, think about that with articles. I wrote 8 articles.
I get 3 more dogs. Done.
I mean, that would be the concern for me is people being tentative about coming into the industry as tumultuous it is. And bringing up the movies, I think, is a good example of the fact that what the movie industry has, that video games doesn't, is a union, right? Like, there is a network there. Here you come and you get laid off and you are out on your own. I hope you've saved your money and you know what you're doing. There's no one helping you try to find a job.
IGN's coming out now as pro-union. That's the stance.
Colin Moriarty busts through the window. He's just like off. His union sense went off.
IGN has your back, right?
He's on vacation. A tingle just like went up his spine.
There's a strange disturbance. But no, I'm not saying that's what we need, but that's like the one thing that makes this job, again, very awkward.
Sure.
Awkward?
In terms of jump, hey, I want to go be a video game developer.
That job.
I hope that I get on at a first party studio. Yeah, not my job.
Well, you said this
I just
job,
get to talk about everybody closing.
Yeah.
I hear there's some openings at Naughty Dog.
Yeah, a crash, I don't really see. What I wonder is, you know, we talked a lot recently. The business now is lots and lots of indie games and then a few key tentpole AAA games that come out during the year. I just wonder how long is that sustainable? Or is that just the new model?
People have to stop buying games for them to stop being made.
Yeah.
So like if people are gonna stop, if there's gonna be a drought, it would mean that like there's people are just like, I'm sick of these games.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's enough innovation now where
more money is being spent on games than ever before.
I can see people getting sick of Madden and Call of Duty, though.
Sure.
Like, but then
there's a, they're not quite sick of Assassin's Creed yet, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's stuff.
We're getting two this year, so we'll see.
But, you know, that's how it is, right? I mean, I think series can die out.
Sure.
We do. There are fewer, bigger, big AAA games. Just straight up, there's a smaller number of them. You know, every year than there was the year before. But
you
there
think
are.
So?
Yeah, I think so. Totally.
Man,
think about AAA. Like, was there one in April?
I think how many AAA PS4 games are coming out this year?
I think there's plenty of expected AAA games. They just don't turn out to be AAA games, like Knack or Titanfall or something like that.
Yeah.
Titanfall
is pretty AAA.
I don't know if sales are gonna like reflect Titanfall being like the AAA title that you know everybody thought it was gonna be.
Sure. Maybe.
Who's the best-selling game?
Are you guys still playing it?
Greg?
I would be if I wasn't playing Mario Golf.
Yeah, Mario Golf is where it's at.
Triple A title.
So we do see, like, we have talked about the middle falling out of the video game industry, but to counter ourselves, like, you see a studio like Ubisoft. The two games that I'm playing a lot right now besides Elder Scrolls are Trials and Child of Light, which are both mid-tier titles from Ubisoft. And, like, they're not indie. They're too big budget, you know, to be on that small tier, but they're also not. They're not the Assassin's Creed games that 1,000 people work on. And they're $15 or $20, and they're awesome. Like, that model works for them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're okay. I think we're safe from another crash like we saw back in 1983.
Yeah, I think we're in a great spot.
From that specific type of crash.
Out of time. Certain
when
things.
When everybody gets addicted to VR, then games are just going to die.
Yeah.
It's just going to be VR porn.
That's true.
Well, that was the big concern when DC Universe Online came out.
VR porn.
Is that people would only play that for the rest of their lives. And for some of us, it came true.
The big concern.
Did you know that your glasses have the Bank of America symbol on them?
I don't think it's the exact same logo.
Right? Isn't it? It's totally the Bank of America symbol.
That's pretty close
to
the
Bank of America. Did you see the disclaimer at the beginning of this episode?
Are we brought to you by...
You can't even see it, though.
I know. I don't care.
Okay. Let's compare.
I think so. Maybe we should hold this up.
I don't have my bank on the credit card.
Put your card in
there,
right?
I wasn't going to hold it up like an idiot.
Anyway.
It's not the exact same
logo. There's a whole Twitter account that does nothing but reply to people that tweet out their credit card number.
Oh, yeah. That's the best.
And it's like, you just posted your credit card number on Twitter. You need to cancel your card and get a new one. And it replies and says that to people all day long.
I just can't believe it happens often enough.
Many times, multiple times a day,
People are like, I just got a new credit card. Yeah. Look how pretty it is.
Yeah,
why would they do that?
Going shopping, you know, and tweet a picture of their card. Yeah.
Because there's 6 billion people on this planet.
Yeah.
And some of them don't know that.
Well, that's like the famous George Carlin joke, right? Is like, think about how dumb the average person is and then realize that half of all people are dumber than that.
Did you write that?
Judge.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
You said it was George Carlin.
Yeah.
Our next email comes from Michael Baker.
Michael Baker.
You know, last week we celebrated GameScoop 300.
We did.
It was awesome.
That was really fun. So he says, you know, last week you talked about the big things that happened in the last 8 years of gaming. What would you like to see happen in the next 8 years in gaming?
8 years?
Yeah.
Why'd you choose that?
Because GameScoop's been running for 8 years.
Oh.
So what are we?
And it's been 8 years?
Yeah.
What are we going to be
talking
about? You
guys should have an anniversary episode.
What are we going to talk about on GameScoop 600, in other words?
And what was the biggest change?
On the moon!
On GameScoop 600.
We'd like to announce now that GameScoop 600 will take place on the moon.
Doing zero G here.
Yeah, exactly.
Or low G.
I got it.
Yeah. I saw a graph of how much you'd weigh on different planets. On the moon, I would weigh 28 pounds.
Oh, damn, dude. Yeah. Svelte.
We could just be throwing you around, right?
Yeah, just woo. Like those beach balls at concerts. You'd just be like throwing me around. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Greg, let's start with you. What do you hope comes to pass to video games over the next
gender equality
years?
We're right there. It sucks that gamer girls are still gamer girls, and it has to be. It's like one of the, like, you know, there's all these social causes we fight on our daily basis as human beings, and then in our own microcosm of the video game culture, the fact that a girl, one of our, you know, female reporters, writes a review, and then they're destroyed in the comments or whatever. How do they know anything? They're just a girl. They don't know anything about gaming.
The gaming Taliban, I believe Cliffy calls them.
Is that what he calls them? That's a good one.
That's a good label. Same people that are commenting on this article right now.
No, we have good fans. The good people,
not these,
too.
Not those people.
Okay,
the commenter that I've featured at the top of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's well-documented, right?
Yeah, so you're talking about gamers, not like game characters.
I'm talking about the gaming culture. Okay. To where it isn't that here's the guy in his giant mech suit and here's the girl with half of her body exposed and her tits hanging out. Like,
what I mean? Booth babes, the whole deal, like at E3 at a show like E3.
Well, I've seen enough hot dudes there too. I'd rather see that quotient come up as well. Okay. If you're gonna have, you're selling your beach game, you got the hot dude, you got the hot girl, that's fine.
I'm with you on this. For the sake of discussion or having to make GameScoop a talk show, you bring up gamer girls.
We are
as
contractually
an example.
Obligated. Yeah.
I think a lot of gamer girls choose to put themselves out there as gamer girls. That's like the persona.
True. I do see a lot of like female like Twitter handles, and they'll say, "I'm a girl gamer."
Yeah, sure.
That's fine if you want to own it and that's your identity. Sure. Okay. I'm not talking about the term gamer girl. I'm talking about
that whole
fake
movement
girl,
of like,
fake nerd, fake. You don't know what you're talking about. Blah blah.
Sure. Like I do think let's not like it's awful the things that people said about Keza, and other people that used to work at IGN. Like, and it's stupid. Like, but there are a lot of women that are like, I'm a girl gamer, and you gotta respect that. And they're really like, that's this persona that they've crafted for themselves in a way that men don't feel like they need to or choose not to.
Well, yeah, but we men don't need to. And if I'm understanding your argument right, men don't need to call the attention, I'm a true gamer, blah, 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 because nobody would ever question that. Nobody gives a shit if you're a dude and you're just like, I'm a dude gamer. Like, no, it's fine.
Gamer,
you know what I mean? But like, a girl's like, I love games. And they're like, prove it. What do you know about games? Sure. Yada, yada, yada.
That stuff all sucks.
I just don't see a lot of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean.
Oh, man, it's all over the place.
I know it happens. I just don't see it a lot.
I mean, it's a very sexist, immature.
I don't see a lot among like IGN commenters.
Mm. Oh, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's just the whole Anita Sarkeesian thing. Like,
I know about that. That I get.
That's like the worst case scenario for that stuff. But we have a problem with just not having any female or different protagonists than white male protagonists in games, and like it's getting boring.
Yeah, a lot of video games are like male power fantasies for sure.
Yeah, and it's the same. It's the same background and story for characters. Yes, everybody should be able to tell their own story, but I don't know. Like I always like it when there's some kind of choice or some kind of strange character background that you explore in a game. I want to play those characters. I don't want to play a white guy that has a cool job. That's me.
Yeah, bald a space marine with a shaved head was like every game when last gen launched.
Yeah. Even late into it, but yeah.
Sure.
I mean, that's the thing, and that's why, I mean, like, the examples of, like, FemShep or whatever stand out so well, or even Gone Home Story, right? Like, the reason those things get talked about over and over again are the fact that these are different experiences, and that's what, personally, I want out of games. I'm with you, right? That I want to be put into somebody's shoes that isn't just like, well, he's vanilla, so that you can fill in your gaps. Like, tell me their story.
Like
yeah.
I want to role play in something where it's like, whoa, that's a strange life experience that I would never think about or have.
Right. And I want to see that, and I want to see characters treated with that kind of respect, like FemShep would be, versus some character that's clearly just there for TNA.
You played as FemShep?
100%.
You did too, Damon?
Of course.
I did.
It's a video game where you can play as a woman.
So. Do you always choose ladies?
Oh, yeah.
I do too.
Always.
I like that. Yeah. I prefer if I'm gonna look at a person for a really long time and
that's exactly how I think about it. Yeah,
I play as ladies in every MMO.
Yeah,
the men are just so stupid looking. Always, it's just
that's
the worst.
That's the reason I do it. Is actually in an MMO, like they just look. All the men look terrible in my opinion.
Sure.
And if you can design them, I just don't really care that much at that point. Yeah. I usually use default character designs now too.
Is it because you don't?
What's
like,
happening to me?
Is it because you don't like the mustache options on the male characters?
They don't have them.
Yeah, is that the deal breaker for you, though?
Yeah.
Sure.
When I take a picture of myself with the 3DS to make a me out of myself, it, like, puts a mouth, like, on my forehead. It just has no mustache
It has no idea who you are.
Yeah. It doesn't have mustache software.
That's what next gen will truly bring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
8 years from now.
Mustache.
That's what you want to pick? You hope in video games are
spoilers.
More mustaches?
Yeah.
Greg, I think you know, gaming gender equality is very admirable to hope for over the next 8 years.
I think we're getting there, right?
I was going to say, we're getting better.
The fact that we talk about it, the fact that there can be female characters that are strong, there can be gay characters, like, is one of those things. There's always, there's people who get up and out arms about it and crazy and want to be insulting about it, but then as video games have matured with us and we've matured as gamers, I think you see that start to fade away, right?
So there's a few, do you think Tomb Raider is a good example or a bad example?
I thought it was a good example.
Sure.
I didn't, you know, I think early on, it got caught up in a whole swirl of.
You're gonna want to protect her.
And she's gonna get raped, and people were like, "Ooh!" And like that's when people freaked out. But playing it, I thought that she was a strong female character, right?
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I thought she was realistic looking. Granted, beautiful, but that's every person in every movie, unless you're Jonah Hill or Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Sorry, dude.
Zinger.
Hey, they're on Team Fat with me. We're allowed to talk about each other.
We've talked. You're no longer part of
Team Fat. Very Team Fat.
No. We've already... Team Fat is not a number on a scale. It's a frame of mind.
Right.
So are you on Team Fat?
Yeah, 100% I'm on Team Fat. Yeah. I am too.
I don't... Anyway, Justin.
Get out of here, 29 pounds on the moon.
28.
Don't try to add pounds
to my moon.
My moon weight would probably be like way more than 28 pounds.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
What do you want?
What do you hope happens to video games for the next 8 years?
I really like this modern trend in single player games that use the internet and use social features to still help you feel connected to other people. GTA did it with its stock market. So there's no, well, there is multiplayer in that game, but the campaign is all single player. You're playing on your own, but the things that other players do can still impact your game world. Mm. Assassin's Creed 4 is another awesome example of this when it worked of. There were these super rare white whales that you would need to get. And if you spotted a white whale, it would put a pin on the people on your PlayStation friends list. If they were one of your friends, it would put a pin on their map that lasted for, you know, a certain amount of time, a day or two. And then they could hunt down that white whale.
So passive multiplayer effects.
Yeah, like these
passive... Like Journey and Dark Souls type stuff?
Yeah, Journey is another decent example, although that's a little bit more traditional, you know, multiplayer, genuine multiplayer. Dark Souls is another great example of now that these consoles are always connected... I'm not saying I want like other players invading my game world all the time, but just take advantage of those games being online and pinging the internet and let you do cool stuff with your friends list. When I was the mobile guy at IGN, I liked Infinity Blade a lot. And they had these challenges where there'd be a boss that would have millions of hit points, and then every player would go in and like whittle it down a little bit.
Mm.
And then thousands of players together would collectively like be able to take down this boss.
Gotcha.
And you're not playing with other people, but you're all like interacting in sort of a neat, cool way.
No, I hear you.
I'd like to see a mechanic like that taken over to something like Borderlands, where like, you know, once 500,000 people are able to do this thing, it opens up a new area of the map, and then you're all working together, for example. Mm-hmm. And even if you're playing on your own, you're still sort of sharing in like this social experience.
Well, that's one of the things with the new Diablo on PS4, right? The fact that if you and I are friends and this monster kills me, it can then jump to your game. It'll level up, jump to your game, and you'll have the chance to kill it, get extra loot. It'll tell you that you avenged me. And if it kills you, it jumps to someone on your, it levels up again and goes out.
That's really cool.
And I do think like that's the rumors that we're hearing about Assassin's Creed. Mm-hmm. And that is the feature that's in Watch Dogs is you know, and I haven't played Watch Dogs yet, so I don't know if I'm going to like it or dislike it. But the fact that people can, you know, be messing with your game world in their game world, I think stuff like that's super rad and awesome.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of interesting game design space to explore there. Just if you know that 100% of the people that play your game are going to be connected to the internet, like, do neat stuff with that, even if it's just a single-player game. Even if it's something as simple as putting a dot on a map.
So I agree with you, but what do you think that appeals to you more than just a multiplayer game where everyone's in the city with you?
Well, I mean, sometimes I just don't want or don't like traditional multiplayer. Like, I wouldn't want... I liked playing Assassin's Creed 4 on my own, but I like still getting to interact, you know, in a few light ways with my friends. I just like that feeling. I like collaborating and cooperating with people, even if it's not, like, straight-up co-op where I need to grab one of you guys and force you to play at the same time as me.
Sure.
And I also think it's just neat because it's kind of new. Like, it's just not a lot of games are doing
that. Yeah,
they're
kind of just starting to do that sort of thing.
Like, I like, the video games that I like most are the ones that show me something I've never seen or done before. And I feel like that's a space where, like, a Watch Dogs-ish type multiplayer experience can be, there's a lot farther we can iterate on that and a lot farther game designers can go, in my opinion.
Nice. Cool. Samuel.
We were talking about this earlier a little bit, Damon. I really, really like to see tools improved for anybody to be able to make video games.
That's awesome.
And I think... the important thing about making records or making movies is that anybody can do it, and that greatly improved records and movies when that happened. You know, indie films changed the way, you know, you don't have to put money behind a film. You make a much cooler, more interesting film that influences a bunch of other people. Same thing with music. I hate top 40 music. I love little tiny bands putting out records still. It's like my favorite thing. Anybody can do it. Mm-hmm. Anybody can sit down and put out a 45. It's like the easiest thing to do. And I love DIY culture, and I think right now DIY game development is really cool, except it takes coding, and I think coding needs to come out of gaming. And I think the people that are coding games are going to be good at coding, and they might also be really good at making games, but usually you need one of both people, and that's not good enough. People need to be able to make games on their own, and I encourage everybody to learn how to code and make a game,
that's what I'm saying.
It's really, really difficult.
There's a big push these days for everyone to learn to code. Stuff like Code Academy, right?
For sure.
It's highly encouraged. It's considered a very valuable skill to have today.
Yeah. So my futuristic solution to this comes from AI and being able to describe to a computer exactly the behaviors and outcomes you want from things.
Sure.
So you say, I want to start with a game like Super Mario Brothers and change it. I think that's where the tool sets are going to be maybe in 8 years, but probably after that. But who knows? Things move really fast. What's Siri going to be like in 8 years? Yeah. You know, like it could be good enough to start making games.
I mean, it'll probably be, I think it being, you know, Siri-esque is a sci-fi pipe dream, but I think if it'll be the equivalent of being really good at, like, Excel, you know, or, like, something like that. Like, you don't specifically need to know how to code, but if you learn this set of tools and learn how to use RPG Maker, like, you're not actually writing lines of code, but you can do awesome stuff in it. To the Moon was made in RPG Maker, one of the, you know, sort of game maker programs, and that's an award-winning game just on the strength of its soft, you know, that's writing. So
when I play NES Remix, I want to make those NES Remix minigames.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that tool set, actually, WarioWare DIY had stuff kind of like that.
Make your own minigames.
But it's still, it doesn't, everything has assets, and everything has things that people have already created, and I need to be able to go from scratch, because that's what art is, you know? And the people that get to do that, know how to code, I'm jealous of them. It's like the people that you knew growing up that are really good at illustrating. Like, I can draw a little bit, but when people can, like, actually illustrate, it's an amazing innate talent.
So you mean, like a next level Little Big Planet kind of, right?
But then anybody can make a painting or draw a painting, so you don't need to be a great illustrator, so you don't need to be a great coder.
Yeah.
You just need to have the ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And I want people to be able to do that.
That's actually a great point. This is a really good, I'm glad you brought it up, because it's not something I'd ever really thought about before, but, like, anybody can step in front of a camera, and it'll be terrible, it'll be awful, but you can step in front of a camera and speak, you know, and make a little film, or, you know, beat a drum and make music.
It might not be terrible, it might be great.
Well, it might be great, but I'm just saying, like, if you don't have any experience with it, that's not necessarily stopping you from at least trying, but it does stop you from being a game. Like, if you don't have that experience, there's, like, kind of literally know where you can start. There's these apps you can download. There is stuff like a...
But it's like saying, like, oh, you want to make movies? Well, go to school for it. Like, nobody... That's completely ridiculous. That's if you're making a record.
I mean, I do want to say, like, there is RPG Maker. There are programs you can download and buy that don't require code, that even come with free tile sets and stuff like that. Like, you can make a role-playing game now without needing to know how to code, or a tower defense game, but we're not... I think, I'm with you. I'd be super excited to see those tools in another 8 years become more like, you know, Microsoft Word, and less like some crazy intimidating thing.
Do you guys remember that game Fighter Maker? It was for PS1.
I remember that game.
It'll let you make your own fighters. It's one-on-one fighting game like Street Fighter, and then you could create all their moves and the animation and everything. So my friends and I, we like got this game, we were really excited because we loved Rival School, so we were like, okay, we're going to make our own fighter, we're going to make our own characters and design their moves. But then we found out that, like, to save just one character, it took up like an entire memory card for PS1.
Wow.
So it was like basically useless.
There was a game where you could put in your music CDs and they would
make... It was Monster Rancher.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But NES Remix really got me thinking about that, because each bite-sized game in that is something where Nintendo just messed with a ROM.
Yeah,
you know, like, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the guy that made the game. We interviewed him. I forget his name right now, but he said he was just doing that at his desk between other functions. And I was like, I want to do that at my desk. You know,
That sounds awesome. My pick for what I hope happens to video games over the next 8 years is actually similar to what our friend Michael Baker chose on his email.
Michael Baker.
He says, I would like to see game systems adapt a universal game media. Sony and Microsoft can make their own consoles, but one universal disc that will work in all of them.
The UMD, some would call it.
Yeah, Universal Media Disc.
The one console future has been a dream, long been the dream.
That's my pick.
You would rather have a Blu-ray that's, type I'm, media, but only for games.
I hope Steambox actually catches on. So we just have, video games are unique in media, like you need this proprietary console to play this. Like any Blu-ray player will play any Blu-ray. Any music device will play any of your MP3s will stream any service. Like, why do you need this specific console to play these specific games? It seems kind of old and outdated to me.
Mm-hmm. Do you want that more than awesome VR? Nobody chose that. I just wanted to throw that out.
Right. You did talk about that, yeah. I do want that more than awesome VR. Although okay. VR sounds really exciting, yeah. Too. I think that would be good for developers and for gamers. Like, think how awesome Steam is. You know, like Steam, yeah. Everybody has a PC or a Mac. Everybody can play games on Steam. Everybody. But only people that have, a PlayStation 4 can play Infamous Second Son. Think about talented developers like Naughty Dog. Their games are very successful, but they're still limited to only people that own a PlayStation device. You know, if they made a game for a Steambox, like anybody in the world could play this game now.
But anybody could steal it, and there'd be one marketplace, presumably. I mean, the problem with this is back to the shovelware thing. It's like, how do you cut through the crap and find out that Infamous is worth playing?
Except these open platforms haven't ruined music or movies. It's fine.
I think they have.
You think so?
Sure.
You were just talking about
sure, why not? I don't care.
You love 45s, right?
Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, I don't like
any record player will play 45s.
Yeah. No, I agree with the idea. Yeah. I just don't want it to all be on Steam.
It'd be like, well, it doesn't have to be Steam. It could be anything. Like,
I don't want Nintendo games to even be on Steam because I want there to be somebody that says like, this is really only worth playing if you did this and this and this and made it this high of quality.
So this is, well, wouldn't that be systems. Nintendo though? I mean, Nintendo would only be publishing good stuff like that.
I'm just happy that people are like driven to make blockbuster games still, because I do like those a lot.
I think that might undercut
that.
I don't know.
I agree with you. I mean, I think one console would be, it's one of the things.
It'd be beneficial for gamers and developers.
It's one of the things that holds video games back in some ways. You do run into kind of a problem, using Nintendo as an example, they match their software and their hardware up so closely, with things like, like a lot of the DS touch games was sort of the start of that. Mm-hmm. Or like the reason that the GameCube had a Z button, you can go all the way back to that, or the Wii remote. Like you lose some of that if you're stuck with sort of standardized hardware. Mm-hmm. You also lose. You'd have to be super careful of like that sense of competition. You don't really want one marketplace. You want people competing with each other.
Yeah,
definitely.
But Blu-ray manufacturers do compete with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't eliminate competition.
Or yeah, and it's not really them, it's the studios, right? So if studios are still competing, I can see that working out.
Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it'd definitely be convenient.
Greg, you haven't weighed in on my idea.
I also like boxes and manuals though, so.
I'm fine with it how it's spread out right now.
It's because you're a PlayStation fan, you're heavy playing PlayStation games.
All I've been playing is Nintendo lately.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Sorry. All right. Have we covered this topic?
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Topic covered.
Michael Baker. Then that means now's the time on Game Scoop when we talk about the games for gaming.
Yeah, it needs a little thing. Oh, you're doing it.
Yeah.
It was just a Tonight Show ripoff, so we can't really use that. Johnny Carson,
bleep it all out.
I started playing Shadow of Light this week.
Mm.
Yeah, Justin started playing Shadow of Light.
Yeah.
Either of you guys?
I downloaded it.
Yeah, I downloaded it as well. I'm playing on Wii U. Is that going to matter?
No.
Well, I don't think so.
Was worried because everybody in the office seemed to be like, I'm playing on Xbox One or PS4.
Well, it's because we want to justify why we spent $1,000 on these giant machines.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's like a 2D painted looking game. It's
it's beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful. I think it looks the same on every platform. Cool. I'm playing it on 360. So.
And you like it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love it a lot.
I talked to some people on the tubes that thought it was like a little mediocre. And
oh, really?
I'm a little worried about it right now.
Oh, man. I like it a lot so far.
I'm a few hours into it and liking it a lot.
Cool.
So far.
I'm looking forward to it.
It is a little, I would say it's a little on the easy side.
At least the first few hours.
Yeah.
So you jump around and then you have turn-based combat.
Yeah, when you encounter an enemy, it goes to the battle scheme.
Yeah.
You have a world to explore, and then the combat is turn-based, or pseudo-turn-based. It's more like Grandia, if anybody ever played that.
I played Grandia.
It's awesome. It's super great, super gorgeous. I don't have anything bad to say about Child of Light at this time. Except it might be, I'm a little worried about it being too easy. I don't ever play games on hard, but I pumped South Park up to hard just because it was like mindless on a difficulty other than that. And hard was not hard. Hard was like the right difficulty for someone that's played video games. Child of Light may or may not be that. I'll report back.
Yeah, you encounter a friend that joins your party early on.
Yeah.
And for the first couple hours, one of them was leveling up pretty much every battle. So
interesting.
You're increasing very quickly. But yeah, the game is awesome. As you can see, it's beautiful. Check it out. Greg, what are you playing?
I am 50 hours into Mario Golf World Tour. I'm just getting started, seeing as how Friday it gets out to everybody. So I can. Me and Mitch filmed a video today announcing the IGN Invitational, where every fan is welcome to come, be a part of it.
That'd be fun.
Get in on it, play some golf with us. Then last night I went home, downloaded Child of Light, and then played Spider-Man 2 instead.
How is that?
It's not that great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more Spider-Man.
The last Spider-Man 2 was really good.
Yeah, I know. That's what sucks, right? How good that PS2 version was. It's the same as The Amazing Spider-Man the last time around, which is, you know, a fine game and collecting comics and swinging, but it's all forgettable in the long run.
I thought The Amazing Spider-Man 1 was bad. Yeah. I didn't like it. And I've heard 2 is worse than that, but
what was the one with like 5 different Spider-Men? It was all strange.
There was Shattered Dimensions, and then there was Edge of Time. Shattered Dimensions was good.
I played Shattered Dimensions.
Edge of Time
it
was
had
not
like
good.
Noir Spider-Man. And
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it was cool.
I haven't played a Spidey game since then. I was thinking about trying this one out, but
no, this is. Okay. You won't. I mean, I turned it on and it was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, Mario Kart, or I'm sorry, Mario Golf is awesome.
Yeah,
I've been playing a lot.
You've been
playing
a lot too. Yeah. We have to actually sit down and play.
Yeah, the only, I don't know if it's a gripe, if I'd even call it that, the progression system is a little unclear.
The biggest problem with the game is that it's super murky on a lot of things.
The menu layout is kind of
weird.
It's like, where do I start? How do I start unlocking stuff?
Yep.
You just sort of like wander around and start. It's like, you wander onto a course and be like, well, I guess I'll try this.
Yeah. That was the thing is, like, I was playing it, and for the first few days I was playing it, I was like, I'm telling people, this is fun, but it's like, there's only 3 courses in the game? And then they sent me a B-roll list for when they were coming on Up at Noon. And I was like, what the hell? So they got here. I'm like, how did you unlock these? And they're like, oh, well, leave Castle Club, which is like this awesome, you're walking around as your me, playing, buying, and go into this, now go into this, now go into this. It's like, how the hell would you ever know?
Really?
And Toad pops up with dumb tips all the time, and he never tells you how to go do any of this
stuff. That's like normally the one thing Nintendo is always so good about.
Right.
So there's no menu. It's like you walk around the menu.
That's one option in the menu.
Yeah.
From the main screen, you either go into solo play or whatever, you go in, or a quick round of golf, or you go into Castle Club.
But quick round of golf just sounds like the time waster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's like that's everything. Yeah.
That's where there's all these challenge tokens. There's 90 challenge tokens that are star coins. Then you beat all of those, which I did, and I was like, I did it finally. And then it's like, now go get 90 of the moon coins. And I'm like, oh my god, there's too much content.
That's very contemporary Super Mario Brothers to have like that many things
to
do.
I'm so excited about Mario Golf.
Yeah,
it's like the right game
for
the right time.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite those. That's great.
They really nailed it then because the last sports game was Mario Tennis and it was garbage.
Yeah. I'm glad to have good Mario sports games again.
There was the soccer game, Strikers.
Yeah, that
Strikers
was cool.
Was awesome.
There was a sequel that I never played though. There's actually a collection on Wii called like the Mario Sports Collection. And it was just like they just put it out and it got really quiet afterwards. We're like, what happened with that? It was like baseball and 2 other games in that.
Yeah.
Remember that?
No.
I remember baseball. Wow. It had Home Run Derby in it.
Yeah.
Forgot all about that.
Yeah.
It was
forgettable.
Justin, you're still playing Elder Scrolls Online?
Yeah, every night I'm playing Elder Scrolls Online. I'm really bummed out that the sentiment. If people don't like a game, fine, but I feel like they're not liking that game having not played it. You know, they're reading people's reviews and they're wanting to not like it because it's $60 for the subscription. And so now these negative reviews are reinforcing negative feelings they already have. And they've made up their mind about something that they never actually checked out and played. And that bums me out because...
That's not anything new, but still.
Yeah, I know. But it's especially, like, if someone doesn't buy, you know, whatever video game, it's like, oh, that sucks. That game didn't sell. But an MMO, that can kill an MMO if people don't give it a shot. Like, if, like, the bad momentum boulder gets rolling down the hill, there's, like, almost no coming back from that. Like, it snowballs and, like, you know, people will leave the game or people that were on the fence will not try the game and then they don't get the subscriber money that they need and then an MMO can be in trouble really quick. And I like Elder Scrolls a lot, and so it does bum me out that I don't feel like people are giving it a fair chance. I hope it hits consoles, and I hope when it hits consoles that it does fix the problems that I do have with the game and that console gamers have a positive experience.
I'm looking forward to it.
Can we go adventure together?
Yeah, you'll have to show me everything.
Yeah.
We made that pack on this show to play it. I had started it on PC, enjoyed myself fine, but got distracted and I knew I'd really commit to the trophies.
I enjoy just exploring the world, collecting sky
shards. Have we seen trophies yet?
For this?
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's a trophy list out yet. It doesn't come out till June. Yeah. On PlayStation 4.
The wiki editor, Sam Claiborne.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, he would know trophies more than I would know wikis.
It's true.
Sam, what have you been playing?
So I reviewed NES Remix 2, which I liked. I gave it a good score. I thought the challenges weren't as interesting as before, but the game selection is a lot better. It's kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
And that's because like I feel like 7 punch-out challenges that only go through half the people wasn't that great. And, and I knew the games so well. I could make Mario 3 from scratch.
Like I know from your brain.
Yeah, and so like presenting me with challenges in that game and Super Mario 2, actually most of these games, all except the awful Wario Woods. I don't care about the Wario Woods apologists out there. The game stinks. It's so bad. It's so stupid and bad. It's like they give you like platformer controls that don't work and you have to use that to move around puzzle pieces. It's so stupid. Anyway, the rest of the games are all great, and I just know them really well, and like it wasn't very challenging. But it's super cool when they tweak them and they do that remix stuff and they just mess with them. And
oh, look at the using Samus to clear Mario blocks.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything cooler?
As soon as you say it, Aransky ends it.
And I just want to play that, more of that. And I want really hard, a big reel of Punch-Out, like just Punch-Out remix at this point.
Cool. I was so disappointed to find out Punch-Out is, I guess I almost called it my favorite NES game, and I don't know if I would go that far, but it's way up there. Punch-Out's so good. And only 7 challenges for that game?
Yeah.
Why?
The emulation looks so good in NES Remix. Yeah, I mean, it's just beautiful. Everything about it's beautiful. And then you go and you play Virtual Console games that are the same games, and they look like absolute garbage. They didn't get emulation right. On 3DS, it looks pretty good.
I think these games, I'm kind of torn between them getting out a sequel so quickly. Like, NES Remix is this awesome. I hope NES Remix is new Nintendo. I hope this is what Nintendo is now. It's like, hey, we have this cool thing. It's $10. It's out right now.
15,
It's 15.
Leave them wanting more is totally fine with me,
The sequel, out in 6 months. Boom, here it is. But, like, the downside is, then you get a sequel, and they kind of took their best games and squandered them with kind of so-so remixes. Like, take your time and do it right, but do more of this awesome stuff.
Yeah. Still, I recommend playing it, you know?
Sure.
And, like, it comes out in a collection in Japan on disc, and it's so cool.
The two of them are on disc together in Japan.
I want that.
Yeah. It's awesome. But I'll just wait till like, there's 6 of them out and get them on that disc.
Yeah, I hope there's more. Still want Super Nintendo Remix, SNES Remix.
Yeah,
that's gotta be coming.
It would be so, and they will never do, fingers crossed, but never do, like, something as crazy as N64 Remix, but, like, I mean, I can just see doing Mario 64 challenges.
Pretty cool.
Just, like, the weird stuff, because that's what's great about these games is that they challenge you to do things that you did as a kid, like try to get all the coins in that ship level that only has coins in Mario 3. Try to get them all. You don't have to. There's nothing in the game telling you to. It's just a challenge you gave yourself.
It really taps into that feeling of like making your own fun in a video game besides just beating a level.
Yeah, so like think about Ocarina of Time or Mario 64. It'd be really fun if they just dropped you in and be like, do this crazy thing, like get from Death Mountain to the lake in under, you know, a minute and 30 seconds or whatever. You know,
see, that's what I love in Mario Golf, is when you go and you do the challenges, and it's the same course you've had, but it's like, get these coins, get the ball through these rings, get, you know, this, complete 3 holes in a minute and a half. Like, it's taking what they've already built and then just making you look at it different.
In ideal situations, that's what trophies and achievements do.
Yep.
And I think people that are detractors of those things and don't understand them don't realize that I think they used to be a little bit more creative in how they do these things. Mm-hmm. A lot of times now it's like, unlock the level, like, you know, beat these bosses. Yeah. But, like, if you really think about them, that's what challenging achievements are like.
Yeah, too cool. Often it's just, you just earn them naturally as you
finish
play the game
chapter,
normally.
You finish the chapter.
I wrote an article about how nostalgia is underrated or written off all the time, but it's like a totally, like, nostalgia makes people feel good. You hear the music and you see the graphics, and then it takes you back to, like, an earlier time. And, like, so in some ways that's like kind of not fair to modern games because they're at a disadvantage compared to like Zelda. You hear the Zelda music and you're immediately predisposed to like it. But I think like if it makes you happy, like who cares where that happy feeling comes from? And like NES Remix, in my opinion, is an example of nostalgia absolutely done like the right way. Like put a new spin on this old thing and it's awesome.
Last week, one of our audience members asked us what games we felt nostalgic about from our childhood.
Yeah.
And Brian Altano said Super Mario Brothers is one of the games. And then on YouTube, someone commented, Super Mario Brothers cannot be nostalgic. People talk about it all the time on the internet. And someone replied, I don't think you know what nostalgic means. It's pretty good. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like John Praw did.
Yeah, that's a made-up name.
Prawn?
He's a prawn? He's a shrimp?
No, Praw.
Praw. That's even worse.
Praw.
I bet his real name is Paw.
How would he get the nickname Praw?
People made fun of him for calling it, for being a paw, so he put an R in there.
Mm. That's sticking the R.
Scoop!
He says, during your episode 300 special, there was a question about things newer generations of gamers will never appreciate.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share that for years. I have missed the momentous occasion to swap discs. Once Blu-ray discs meant the entire game could be on one disc, I immediately missed the sense of accomplishment of being prompted to insert disc 2. As a kid, my friends and I would brag about which disc of a certain game we were on. My question is, do you think game developers have done a good job building in new rewards for players now that certain technical limitations have been lifted?
That's an interesting one. I've never missed the disc swap, but when he puts it that way, you're like, I do remember that being a big deal when Metal Gear was like, put in disc 2, and I'm like, oh, it's happening, finally! Yeah.
It's usually at a big mid-game like climax. Yeah. Like, if they're smart, they would, you know, a game like L.A. Noire didn't do that, actually. Like, it's just kind of like, oh, okay, you're on the second disc. But like the Final Fantasy games, you'd beat some big boss, and there'd be some big reveal, and then it's like, next disc.
This game, Fear Effect, was on 4 discs on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
We have a couple others. There was a Final Fantasy 9.
Yeah.
I think 8 and 9 were both 4
7,
discs.
8, and 9.
Mass Effect 2.
how many discs was that?
It was on...
Just 2, right?
Was it 3? It was the 3 that was on 2 discs? I'm not trying to confuse you guys. One of them is on multiple discs.
I was going
to
say,
I think it's 2 and 3 on 360 are both on multiple discs.
It was still happening last generation.
Yeah.
Blue Dragon, the Xbox 360 RPG, was 3 discs.
And whichever Mass Effect I'm talking about, I think it was 3, actually, because you put in one disc, and then you put in the other for most of the game, and then for the ending, you put in the first disc again.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
My problem with that is, especially in RPGs where this was most common, is it would sometimes kind of ruin the drama, because you would know you weren't near the end of the game. Like, you're seeing dramatic stuff happening, you think, could this be the final boss fight? I don't know what's going on. This is this big climactic moment. But you're on disc 2 of 4, so you know that you still have another however many hours in front of you.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, of floppy disks, you would install them all first.
Yeah, sure.
And then you'd have like 12 of them instead of a CD-ROM.
Yeah,
and
put them in over. 6 Doom 3.5-inch floppies. Yeah,
it's so funny.
I remember that Karma San Diego.
Yeah, I had that one too.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that different in terms of the story arc, you know, or like, in terms of like rewarding players and feeling like you've hit certain milestones in games. Like, that was there in the old games. You just had to switch discs at certain points. Now it's still there. You're just not switching discs, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think so. Story pacing.
Yeah. I think we're okay on that. John Praw.
Paw. I know his real name.
This is...
Salem Kazi.
Yeah.
That's nailed cool it. Name. Knocked it out of the park.
Home run.
Have you ever put off playing a game that just never got, or just never got into one because one a-hole of a friend spoiled it for you? For me, it was the Assassin's Creed series. My friends would come discuss the endings
just
of each game
to you over
before
email.
I could even play it. Because of this,
show.
Because of this, I only started playing the games after Assassin's Creed 3 had come out.
Man, you know that Assassin's Creed storyline. So and cutting edge.
The reason to play the game.
Killed who? He killed everyone.
I play Assassin's Creed to climb up buildings and then jump on top of people and murder them.
Collect crap.
I don't really... Yeah. The story is not really...
Oh, he's whose grandfather? Whatever. Cool.
Yeah. But other games, like The Last of Us, is a great story, right?
Sure, Last of Us was the one that they put out the demo and then they pulled all the cutscenes from it and people were like... in the comments of IGN articles shouting out the ending. And I remember reading it, which turned out to be fake. It was what they were pulling from, but nobody knew at the time. But I didn't want to know anything. I read it in like some other article, saw it, and I was like, ah. And then I played the game and immediately forgot about it. Mm. And then when it was ramping up to the end, I was like, oh, yeah, is that going to happen? And then it didn't happen. I was like, oh, okay. Like, it didn't ruin the experience for me. It was like I put in the last, was like, well, I know how this
I'm
piece
so
of garbage
sick of
ends.
The spoiler army. I just don't care. Like, you can be a responsible person and not get spoiled most of the time.
Yeah.
And if it means that much to you, then, like, change your ways. Don't go on message boards or read comments.
Oh, okay. So you don't
most
feel sympathetic
main media
towards
companies.
People.
No, yeah. Like, we talk about this all the time. We are so careful with spoilers. And people are always like, oh, you are not being careful enough with your spoilers. Like, yes, we are. We thought about this deliberately, and we're really careful about it.
You're right. It has become an alarmist thing that people have an easier reaction to before they even understand.
Yeah.
There's an X-Men advertisement, an X-Men clip during the credits of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's not like a link between the two movies. It's just a clip advertising the X-Men movie during the credits for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I did a news story on that. Mm. And someone was like, thanks for the spoiler.
Yeah.
It was like, well, how is it a spoiler that there's an X-Men ad at the end of Spider-Man? He's like, oh, I didn't watch the video.
I mean, can you guys think of times recently when like something was really spoiled for you besides that Game of Thrones spoiler?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't happen that much.
No, I mean, I was just going to say the nature of our job, I was going to say the opposite.
We should be spoiled all the time.
Yeah, the nature of our work means that things do get spoiled. I had Last of Us spoiled for
me
before
features
I
editor,
played that.
I think it's different for you.
I mean, I think it's different for anybody at IGN. Like, I had Mass Effect spoiled for me before I played that. It happens a lot, but that's just... I don't know, like, okay. Like,
you shake it off. I mean, games are more than the final 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? More than this character twist. It's playing and getting in cash and learning this.
Well said.
And,
yeah.
So I'm surprised it doesn't happen more with Game of Thrones. Doesn't that surprise
anybody
else?
Every day, but I mean, like, it seems like every Monday it's ruined for somebody.
No, but that's I'm not talking about, the books have been out years before it showed on the TV show. And so how do people that only watch the show manage to avoid, or why aren't there more jerks out there spoiling? Like, people are spoiling Harry Potter and stuff.
Jerks aren't very literate, so they're not really out there trying to read it.
I just don't understand where any of this came from, because when I was a kid, we would talk about the ending of something first.
Yeah.
And like, there just wasn't this. This is just not, when I was talking with friends, I would know when what they had seen and what they hadn't, and I would deal with that. Like, I guess it's just the internet that changed things, but like,
sure.
I don't know. I never talked about spoilers ever until like 2005.
The problem is 999,000 people can be nice, but then one jerk can ruin it for everyone else.
Yeah.
Sure. It only takes that one guy.
So it's only an internet phenomenon, which makes it all the more weird when, like, in real life, when we're all dealing with each other and jobs and stuff, people are like, I don't want to hear about it. It's like,
it's just, okay. For me, it's always the thing of, like, not being, like, you're saying it's, like, the spoilery's job to be on the ball about not getting spoiled, right? And, like, the day that Game of Thrones was ruined for me, right, was ruined by an email at the end of the day from a random PR company that sent us a giant blast email that had nothing to do with
it. I didn't know it was a PR company.
Yeah, and the message line ruined the Game of Thrones from the night before. But that morning, Darren walked in talking to somebody about Game of Thrones, and I turned on and said, hold on, guys, I haven't seen it yet. I put on headphones and I went.
That's all. Sometimes on Monday mornings I have to wear headphones.
Yeah, and there was, like, there was an up at noon where
you took the initiative and saying, like, I'm going to rescind myself instead of shouting at the whole office not to stop
exactly.
That's the thing that the internet needs to understand, is that you can go blackout, media blackout, on whatever you want.
I feel, and I just, but I mean...
Especially on IGN, because we're careful in reviews and stuff to not spoil
sure,
stuff,
so. And but I mean, like, and there's people in comments who are being jerks, but then an example for me was when I had Courtney Draper on Up at Noon for the first time to talk about BioShock. And she's Elizabeth, if you don't know who she is off the top of your head.
Oh!
Spoilers! But in our interview, which is about BioShock, which if I was someone on the other side, I'd already be tentative about watching that interview, right? If I haven't played BioShock.
Exactly.
But in the interview, I'm like, and it gets kind of awkward when, spoiler alert, and then I ask the question. And so many people are like, you didn't give us enough time, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like... All right, well, I don't know how to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I did my best.
Yeah, what do? You say spoiler alert and you just sit there for 20 seconds?
Yeah. Like, I mean, for me, because I'm thinking on the other side, right? Where if I was at my computer working, they're like, spoiler alert, I'd be like, you know what I mean? Or, like, you know what I mean? you black it out.
Greg's just sitting at his desk.
Anyway, a little bit of responsibility on the spoilery's part would be something I'd appreciate.
Sure.
And I will not spoil anything for you, I promise.
One more email today comes from Jason Borman. And his name is spelled really cool. Jayson. Borman has two N's. That sounds like like an action hero, right?
Well,
Jason,
like,
Borman.
It's almost Jason Bourne.
When Jason Bourne couldn't get the job done, they said Jason Borman.
And this,
twice the N's of Jason Bourne.
This email was sent from his Galaxy Note 10.1.
Good.
My question is, do you prefer a talking or silent protagonist in first-person shooters? I prefer silent due to the fact I can project my emotions onto the character easier.
Yeah.
Feels more like I'm looking through my own eyes. When the protagonist talks, I get a slight disconnect because it brings me back to the reality that I'm playing a game. And my emotions don't always match up with the protagonist. Your thoughts would be awesome.
I like him to speak.
Yeah.
I liked when we made that jump, because I remember for years and years and years we had silent, and like, why are you quiet? Like, you're saying nothing, people are exploding in front of you.
So, BioShock
more than Half-Life, which you've already said you're not a big Half-Life fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But Half-Life 2 is one of my favorite games of all time, but that's part of what makes it feel a little bit old, is like Alex has these entire one-sided, one-way conversations with Gordon. And then people make jokes about it, about how he's this weird mute, and like it's just strange. It feels strange.
And those jokes
now.
Are old now because they're in lots of other games too, you know. So it's hard to even do that anymore.
Yeah,
it's almost like a little an aesthetic decision that like is outdated now.
Has there even been a recent first-person shooter where the protagonist was
like Portal?
Well, so you're a character. Yeah. You're a character in Call of Duty, but you're not vocal in the same way that like Booker is.
Sure.
You know, so that's kind of an example. It's mainly focused on the external story rather than
Portal is another good example. Like I guess I don't feel like something's lacking in Portal.
I will say Metroid was better when Samus didn't talk.
Sure. Yeah. That's a good point.
I wondered if they remembered me, and I remembered them.
Maybe.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, do you want Link to talk? In Zelda?
Yeah, I do.
You do.
It's time, man.
I don't.
It's time for Link to talk.
We've waited too long.
You know, that's,
now if he talks, it's going to be super weird.
He talks all the time. He's just like, I'd rather, maybe play a Zelda and she could talk and that'd be really cool.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it has been. It's almost become like we've waited so long that it would be awkward now. Like, you can't, like, Gordon can't talk, Link can't talk, but I do think it would be better.
Other characters don't even talk in Zelda still.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Nobody talks
I think
in
it's
Zelda.
Fine. I like it. I like it in that game, but it's just that's that game's choice and style.
Yeah.
It's a weird, if you don't want a character to talk or whatever, that's fine, but what was his name? Jason?
Jason Bourne.
I did think it was a little strange that he says when they talk, it takes him out of the game, and then he can't, like, project himself onto it.
And I never feel that connected to the game.
I like to think of him going, I'm playing a game.
Yeah, it's like a 1994 Genesis commercial. Yeah. Like, get
it's so
in.
Real.
It's almost. I mean, isn't it more realistic that there's two people like Booker and Elizabeth running through this adventure together? And they're both people with motivations and character traits.
Because it goes back to us wanting to role play
movies and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For me, if he's not talking, I want to talk. I want to respond. And let alone the fact that I feel like when we're playing Wolfenstein.
Yeah,
good old BJ Blazkowicz there is talking about Nazi scum. That gets me amped up to go kill more Nazis and stuff.
Is that coming out soon?
Yeah.
Because the more I think about it, the more I was like, I want to play more.
Yeah, May 20th, I think. I'm ready for it.
There's only one game where you get to play yourself, and it's the Xbox One interface, and it's terrible.
All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Viewers and listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you so much for tuning in for the show, whether or not you listen to the podcast or watch the video on IGN or YouTube. Follow us on Twitter for daily Game Scoops. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Damon.
My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.